Trigger warning, this is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod B 2E, a mile above sea level, at Intergalactic Ferry Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves, and this warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Is it working, Hugo?
I can feel that all the way from sunny and warmish Mexico City. And this is Hugo, the jet cockatoo from Tropicalandia. And yeah, I can feel it. I can feel it. And it's important to remember that this show is covered by a BIPCOT no government license, which allows use and reuse by everybody except for governments. We'll bully you guys. Is that so? So we're having an international show, and I think it's a very good thing that we're able to do that in 2015. International show from all the way from Scotland, coming through Mexico and into your ear hole there in the U.S. of A. And I think we're gonna use this fact to be able to talk a bit about the outsider perspective. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, that could be interesting, because I mean, it's usually when either of us are on, we're usually on with one of the US based hosts. So it could be interesting to have a non-US perspective. You know, we're stealing all the radio jobs.
Yeah, stealing all the radio jobs for the huge amounts of salaries that we draw. And of course, I'm joking. We're drawing no salary here. And well, yes, it's the more interesting because we are liberty-oriented people, and that's a big thing in the U.S. That's a big thing in America, even though libertarians may seem they may feel like they're so few. Relatively, in the U.S., there are more libertarians than anywhere else in the world, and I'm wondering why that is.
I know what you mean. It's interesting, I mean, because especially in my part of the world here in the UK, I mean, even, you know, the Conservative Party here are, you know, massively in favour of like a national health service and things like that, what you might call socialised healthcare. And it's kind of interesting because, I mean, if you think about libertarianism as we call it and as we use that term, it's a kind of modern version of classical liberalism. And classical liberalism was a big ideology in this country, say even about the 1800s. And at that time, the word liberal meant something very different to the way we would use the word liberal now. And I suppose when you look at it, I mean, I'm going to oversimplify it a bit here, but sort of around about the 1900s and that, the ideas of like classical liberalism, you know, in the UK in general, started to give way to more social liberalism. And that's kind of what we call, you know, liberalism now. If we call someone a liberal now, we're really talking about people who are more socially liberal-minded instead of people who are, like, you know, classically liberal-minded. I don't really know why that shift took place. It's interesting, but
I don't either. And that kind of I was wondering if you still call your libertarians in the political arena or the Libertarian Party, however libertarian they could possibly be, if you still call them liberals there in the UK. Or are you still calling the libertarians in a party the liberal party? And I know in the US it all means social and liberal, but most of the economic policies are socialistic. But what about the UK?
Yeah, I mean, we don't really have what you would call libertarian politicians here.
Yeah.
Not in any real sense of the word. I mean, there is a party here called the Liberal Democrats, but they're basically social liberals. They're definitely social liberals. And they're a party that, well, it's a bit confusing, but the Labour Party here, who are sort of supposed to be the party on the left, they split in the 1980s into two separate parties. And then one of the parties they split into, the SDP, joined the Liberal Party and they became the Liberal Democrats. But if we use the word liberal here, I mean, we are talking in the same sort of terms as sort of how you would use it in the US. It's generally someone that's kind of socially liberal. I mean, a lot of people here, don't really use the word libertarian at all. When I bring it up to people, if I say like I'm a libertarian, I mean, pretty much all the time people say, well, what's that? You know, people don't really know the term here at all, you know?
It's funny that it would be unknown. There is a version of libertarian, or the word libertarian, which is very old. This use of the word libertarian, that means left-wing anarchist. And that use is more known here in Mexico than the... We use the word in Spanish, of course. We use the word libertario. And that word, we're trying to take it back. But some of the left-wing anarchists, you know, the red and black guys, and some of them actually do vandalism. And so, some of them who call themselves anarchists, some of them actually do vandalism. And that's why we're trying to take both words back from them. And but you know, there used to be a time when the people who wanted change in the social arena also wanted change in the business environment and in the law. And I'm referring to exactly that period you talk about. There used to be a time when people who wanted progress were not the progressives. Mm-hmm. Would you say that? Yeah. I mean, they wanted rights for women, and at the same time, they wanted rights for business people. They wanted tariffs to be removed, and they wanted free trade, and you know, all those good things came together.
Yeah, I mean, I did a show, it was ages ago when I used to do a podcast, and it was with Sean Gabb, who's the director of the Libertarian Alliance in the UK. And what was interesting, actually, because we were talking about classical liberalism and the Liberal Party in like the 1800s and things like that, but as he was going through it in that show, he was pointing out that the Liberal Party started when they were in government. They like imposed a lot of sort of restrictive laws on freedom, and he actually saw at that point the Conservative Party as they were at that time. The Conservatives were kind of more libertarian in some ways. Which was kind of weird.
That's pretty much exactly what happens in the U.S. Some of the conservatives are more libertarian, at least in economic matters. And we're on conservative radio, so that's to say to our audience that if you're a conservative, you really don't like people messing with your money, or you don't like the government messing with your money, you should probably bring it up just a notch and make it universal, right?
But that's the only problem. I mean, it's funny because, like, sort of as libertarians, I think we sort of take the good bits from the left and the good bits from the right, because, I mean, sometimes I'll hear some conservatives and certain countries say some things about, you know, lower taxes and things like that. Obviously, I'd prefer no tax, but, you know, lower tax would be a start.
Yeah.
But then you get the problems of a lot of them are kind of pro-military, pro-war. A lot of them want to legislate based on their own preferences, like they're against, you know, they want drugs to be illegal and things like that. They want prostitution to be illegal, you know. So I always think when I try and describe libertarianism, it's like we sort of take the sort of, maybe if you want to put it this way, the sort of economic sense from the right, you know, where it exists. And we take the, you know, there's good bits that you would people associate with the left, like sort of being anti-war, being pro-drugs decriminalization and things like that. So that's why I think libertarianism is quite a sensible point of view, you know, because it doesn't go to either of those two extremes.
I would say that. And, I would say also time is... As time progresses, there are some causes which I would never have thought that would be popular. Like, some of the things with the drug legalization, we recently had a thing here where some people were presenting a legal recourse against, for being able to grow and sell and all those things. And that's why I think both in especially in the sense of personal liberties, time is in the favor of liberty and libertarians. And that would be a good thing, you know, to realize earlier rather than later that that's the way things are going. And probably not necessarily for riding the bandwagon, though politicians would love to do that, but rather for not wasting a lot of time trying to go against the current, specifically when those currents are anti-liberty. You know, let's keep things illegal and let's not allow people to live with whomever they want.
Yeah.
Those things.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah, I mean, here people are, I don't know what it's like in Mexico, but like, here a lot of people are scared of certain aspects of liberty. Like, I mean, drug decriminalization is something that's not, well, it's a bit more, let's get a bit more popularity. But I mean, even just the other day, I was talking to someone about how I think that guns should be legal here for people to use. And every single person I speak to, whether they're more right wing or more left wing, they're all across the board. People I've spoke to, they're against guns being legalized completely. I mean, people have people here are terrified of having guns legalized. They think that the world will just go to hell, you know, like if people are allowed to have a gun. It's crazy.
Yeah, many people think people are crazy. I would say it's us right now, the unarmed, because we are not allowed to have guns either. You in the UK, in myself in Mexico, it is very, very hard. As far as I know, it's harder even in the UK than it is here in Mexico. But what we've been finding is that public opinion is already doing the job of the law. If you'd say that, you don't need to have an anti-gun law if everybody's scared of guns where you are. It's the same thing here. Well, probably not the same, but not exactly the same, but it's similar. That's kind of sad.
Is it hard to get a gun in Mexico? Do you have to get a permit and things like that?
Well, actually, you can't. It's extremely hard to get a permit to carry around. You can get a firearm to have in your home, and still you have to provide a lot of evidence that you have an honest way of gaining your living. And the worst part about it, because that kind of seems a little bit, that seems reasonable that you shouldn't be, that you should say, okay, this is where I'm getting my money if I'm going to get a gun. But some of the things are not reasonable, like having to buy them from the government. That's kind of horrible. But I love there's a market. Let's go to it.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Meow. Meow, meow, meow. We're back. The fiends are back. And Dan, we were talking in the last segment about how we were the unarmed in the whole Freedom Fiends crew, because we're living in countries where you're not supposed to have a gun and they don't want you to have a gun. You're in the UK.
It's so strange, though.
Yeah, you're in the UK and I'm in Mexico, just to remind the audience.
Yeah, this is an outsider show.
Yeah, totally. So, what does it take in the UK to be able to own and or carry a firearm?
Well, you can forget about carrying one straight away.
Yeah.
I mean, like, to own one, you have to register with the police and all these kinds of things, and you have to obtain a permit. And I mean, it is possible to do. It's just there's a lot of hoops you need to jump through. And I mean, I deliver mail for a living, and I used to deliver to a gun shop actually, but like, it's the only one I can think of. I can't really think of any other gun shops apart from that one. And the reason why there's a gun shop in that particular area is because it's sort of a bit more countryside, it's a bit more rural, and there's a lot of people there that sort of, you know, have farms and things like that, so they get more of a pass to own guns. But it's even the kind of thing that if you apply for a gun, because you have to register with the police and things like that, it puts a, you know, it puts a lot of attention on you, if you know what I mean, you know, kind of like, so why do you need a gun and things like that. I mean, I don't know how possible it would be if I actually tried to go through it, but I'm not going to even attempt it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And in the case of Mexico, you can, it is extremely hard to be able to carry around a gun. But it's the same thing that you were saying about rural areas or small towns. Actually, we here in Mexico have about, well, our own version of the Second Amendment in the Constitution, which is kind of funny because nobody carries a gun around. But still, you're allowed to have more weapons at home if you live in the on the countryside. It is probably understood that access to the police is less available, you know, in such a, you know, small town. If they come to rob you, to kill you, whatever, you should be able to not wait for the police. And well, that kind of makes sense in a way, but we know that when you're trying to get help from the police, even in an urban area, you're gonna get, you know, service times of, I don't know, 20 minutes, an hour, or maybe even longer. I remember in this was in Venezuela, not in Mexico, but it's all the same. They once they had a robbery once in a gas station that my family member of mine, my cousin, owned, and they asked for the police to come and then, you know, fill up some paperwork and do some work there, you know, just to write it down and, you know, have some sort of document that this happened. And they actually showed up the day after. So, you know, so much for evidence and so much for fingerprints and so much for anything else. If you show up the day, a day later, you know, all the evidence, the whole setup is gone. There's nothing to investigate.
Yeah.
So it's the same in an urban area. Well, probably not by law, but it's the same in reality that you should be able to, you should be able to be to defend yourself from attackers, and I think that's a legitimate function of weapons, so firearms. I'm pretty much.
Absolutely, it depends who's possessing the firearm.
Well, that's the first step. You should be able to possess the firearm, and well, if you're at home and you're afraid, you actually have more protection than you were than you would if you were walking around. And in that sense, it doesn't make a lot of sense to just be able to have it at home. I mean, at home you have knives and you have a door and you may have so many ways of defending yourself. If you're out in the street, I don't know what the argument would be. There's cops around. Is that it? What's that word you use in the UK for a policeman?
Oh, there's a few. A copper is one we use. One of the English terms is bobby for some reason.
Yeah, bobby. I was thinking about that one. I mean, I'm trying to just saying the ones that are radio friendly, of course. the terms for a policeman, bobby. Are those the classic UK English cops that have the funny hat and.
The big daft helmet, yeah.
Yeah, those are the ones. And police around the world is pretty much the same. But we'll talk about more about that when we come back from the market. Meow.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Meow. Meow en español. Meow
in Scottish. We are back. Dan in Scotland, Hugo in Mexico. And we're kind of comparing a little bit, talking about gun laws and things, because, you know, this goes out over radio in the US, and you might have heard things about gun laws, and yes, they are restrictive in both of our countries. I suppose you could kind of, if you're a US listener, you could take this on board, because, you know, if you don't hold on to your guns, you could end up like us in these countries. And the thing is, we have harsh gun laws in both of our countries. You know, you have to register with the police, the government, things like that, obtain permits and things. And I mean, here, I mean, the word concealed carry permit does not exist in the UK. Let me tell you that right now. It's true. But the thing is, I mean, there is all these legal channels to try and get guns, but that doesn't stop, you know, I don't like to use this term, but, you know, it makes sense. That doesn't stop criminals from obtaining guns illegally, you know, not at all. I mean, I remember there was a guy I used to work with years ago, and he actually said to me one time he could get me a gun. And I declined because, you know, I'm not stupid, and I know that trying to use a gun, having never used a gun, I would probably blow my own hand off, you know. But that's the thing. And I mean, in both of our countries as well, it's not just like, you know, criminals and stuff can obtain guns illegally, but then there's bigger movements that have been able to obtain guns. I'm just sort of thinking about sort of, you could say, the IRA operating, you know, in Ireland and in the UK, and the Zapatistas in Mexico.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, sure. You know, there's, if you want to get a gun and you have a political agenda, it's, well, you're not going to wait for the government to give you permission. So even on grounds of national security, that's not working either. And well, yeah, sure. And one of the bigger casualties in the war on guns would be, you know, like you said, it would be wouldn't be a good idea if you didn't have any training to just get a gun. That would probably be, I don't know, even more dangerous to yourself or to your own family, probably. If you did that, and that's one of the biggest casualties of the war on guns. People are afraid of getting training, or have no ways of getting training, or they feel, or we feel, because we're in that position, that the government will attract attention from the government if we do that. If we do, you know, constantly talking about guns and gun legalization and gun training with a non-aggression principle, which is a video, a DVD by Michael Dean, which is available for sale everywhere in Amazon and such online stores. And the thing, it's pretty much the same as it is with drugs. You know, people have been talking about drugs and saying, you know, when there's prohibition of drugs, people die of overdoses because they cannot get good information on how to use the drugs, the dosage, and how to practice, or how to consume drugs safely. And people will say that, but not a lot of people talk about the thing with firearms. You can it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. There will be accidents and deaths by firearms in a place where you cannot get any training, and that's so sad, because people who are probably trying to defend themselves end up getting hurt.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what makes it more dangerous as well, that there's no access to that kind of training. I mean, unless, like, you join the army or something, you know.
That's the old saying, right? If you want to have a gun, join the SS in Nazi Germany. Who said that? I've heard that mentioned on The Fiends before. Was it Goebbels? I don't know. One of those really evil guys said that. If you want to have a gun, you should join the SS or join the army or join, yeah.
And that's the thing. Sometimes I say to people, you know, that are against guns, I'll say, don't you think it's a little bit, they'll say, oh, only the police and the military should have guns. And I'll say, well, don't you think that's a bit dangerous? Because then it means that you have an unarmed populace and you have a government that has all the guns and the people don't, you know, and people will say things like, oh, but, you know, nothing bad will ever happen, as if it's not so bad already. But, like, they'll go, there'll be no reason we would have to rise up against the government for any reason. I'm not saying we will, but you never know. I mean, it's very, very dangerous to start out that, oh, it can't happen here argument. That's a very dangerous road to go down because you don't know what can happen.
Yeah, you don't know what can happen. And, you know, if the current president in chief, I'm going to use that term of the temporary king that we have in, I would say in Western governments, we also elect a king, but we just for 5, 6, or 4 years. And if the current king is not that bad, there could be a future king who is very unjust and unfair and criminal to the population. And it's the deal is not betting on that you're gonna have to fight the government at one point or there will be a rebellion. The thing is that if people have guns, the government will think twice before doing some of the horrible things they do. That we probably want. Nobody wants a revolution. Nobody wants violence in the streets. But we do want scared governments. Governments that are scared of the population. We don't have those, yeah. Right? Here in Mexico, in the UK. I remember you were talking about people being able to get guns even though they were illegal. And there's, I'm a member or I subscribe to a Facebook group. I don't do anything there, but it's people just showing guns around, people in Mexico showing guns. And you know, that if anything larger than a 38 special is meant to be used by the army here by Mexican law, and the penalties are very, very harsh. There's people on that Facebook group showing Uzis and I don't know how you say Uzi or Uzis, you know, that Israeli submachine gun, and showing AK, fully automatic AKs, AK-47s. So, you know, that's a kind of is proof, and they just make up an account and do that and show their guns around. The thing is that they are around, and even, you know, regular people who want to defend themselves, like myself, cannot have guns, but they even show their guns around on Facebook. Those people, I'm not saying they're bad. They could be bad, but they probably not all of them are narcos, you know. But you cannot stop that. And actually, there was an arrest recently in Mexico the past few weeks where a guy was set up in a sting operation to arrest him because he was offering a weapon on Facebook. So, you know, a federal agent here in Mexico went in, and actually through that arrest, they also confirmed that they have full-time people working on Facebook trying to, you know, sting people and have them arrested. And a guy was actually arrested. The whole thing is the message. You make it very public, so people will be scared of buying and selling guns on Facebook. So what I'm going with all this is that you cannot simply stop firearms trade through law. You know, not even, it doesn't matter how harsh the penalties are. I don't know.
Yeah.
And
if people will still find a way. I mean, when you see the military hardware that the IRA managed to amass, I mean, it wasn't just a few small arms weapons. I mean, they had all kinds of military hardware. I mean, I know you could say they're not the average person, they're like a paramilitary group, but the fact is, I mean, in a country where, you know, people who are not part of the government aren't supposed to possess weapons like that, you know, they found ways to get them in, and they got an awful lot of military hardware in, so it can still be done. I mean, the laws, like you say, the laws aren't going to stop people. It's the same with drugs and everything else. They can make it illegal all they like. People will still find ways to obtain these things.
Sure, and you know, people who are in favor of one and not the other they really have to get their facts checked, because, you know, it's pretty much the same thing. I was thinking about how corrupt military and corrupt police pass, buy and sell and export and import drugs all the time. And, well, given the economic incentives, they also do that with firearms. Here in Mexico, well, you can get a There have been attacks with grenades of, you know, infighting between drug dealers, and those grenades are not coming through anywhere else but military depots. You know, they are.
Yeah,
it's the same thing with police. You know, they draw a salary, they get paid, but they can never get paid so much that they won't take a bribe for, you know, a high enough amount of money.
Yeah, some people here try and use the argument that routinely the police are not armed here. However, there is what they call rapid response units who are armed. So even though maybe your average policeman you see walking down the street will not have a gun, if they need to get someone with a gun there, it doesn't take them very long. You know, they do have them. There was a bit of a controversy here a while ago because it came out that more police were being routinely armed than before. But it's not a normal thing. I mean, normally the police you see on the street here, they don't carry guns. But still, like I said, I mean, they do have them. And they do have teams who can get to places with them, you know.
Yeah, if you call for the police, they will be there in 3 hours. But if one of their buddies call for the armed team, they will be there within a minute, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it's not the same. There is different tiers of service, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I should mention this as well. You know, because gun laws are quite restrictive all over Europe. And I hear a lot of, I see a lot of like American people I know using Switzerland. And they say, well, because, you know, Switzerland don't have an army in the traditional sense. It's more like people are sort of, they're sort of conscripted to do national service and they're part of the Swiss militia. Now, I see a lot of people that say, oh, everyone in Switzerland has a gun in their house and it's perfectly safe. There's one thing we do need to mention about this. From 2007, it is true that people who are in the Swiss militia, your average person, does keep their equipment at home. But from 2007, they don't keep any ammunition at home. They only have the guns and no ammunition. So we have to bear that in mind.
Well, that's horrible. That's
so we're getting our argument straight.
That's like having pot, but nowhere to smoke it. We'll be back
for a snowball.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, there's some Squisklar Squig Elves from Death Clocks. And you are listening to The Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Pipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And Ask Me About My Worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch. Now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Meow, 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 meow.
Meowing away. You know, this last segment always makes me want to meow harder than the other ones. The others. Yeah, sure. And we're talking about Switzerland, and if they're not allowed to have any ammunition on, inside of their homes when they do have a rifle, I don't know what kind of rifles they have. Probably Michael would know. But they're not allowed to have any ammunition. I mean, ammunition is like having... I think I said it backwards. It's like having a bong, but nothing to smoke in. nothing to smoke in the bong. Yeah, pretty much. So, I don't know.
It's supposed to be, I think there's a few sort of, as far as I understand it, there's a few sort of early responders in the Swiss militia that are allowed to keep, you know, everything. But the idea is that they only have the gun if, you know, they're needed for national defense. So then if something were to happen, an invasion of any type, then they have to go to their military barracks or whatever, and then they get their ammunition, you know, but they take their gun with them. It's just that I see people using that as a pro-gun argument, and I'm not against pro-gun arguments. It's just that they leave out, they don't realise the bit that none of them have ammunition, so it's kind of factually incorrect. So when you use it as a pro-gun argument, but somebody knows they don't have ammunition, it's easy to knock that argument down.
Yeah, and I don't think this argument is really very good, because I've used it before, of course. But the thing is, the firearm is there to protect yourself and your property. Maybe you choose to protect others and their properties too. But what if you're getting a gun just to protect the state and protect you know, the whole country? That's not what
that's
we're.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, that's wrong on principle, right? It's like, okay, you know, the whole reason you should have a gun is to be able to defend your government and your homeland against, you know, against whatever. But I think the argument would be, the good argument, our argument should be, you know, it's to defend yourself. And along with defending yourself, you will be able to defend others. But it's not just necessary to be called into arms by a, you know, I'm pretty sure at the time of a hypothetical invasion, there would be a general and you'd be following orders like a good.
Yeah,
like you could serve.
You have a gun, but you can only use it when the state tells you can use it and what the state tell you to use it for.
Yeah,
like they can't trust you to use it for anything else.
Yeah, you're going to have a gun, but you're going to use it to kill whom we say you should kill. So, yeah, that's not good either, because you want to use it only in self-defense, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, so that's one of the problems with that. I mean, apart from that, the Swiss Army model is quite interesting, because it's not like your traditional kinds of army, and that is sort of an interesting sort of idea. I mean, Switzerland's done all right, stayed neutral during World War II and things like that, but you know, it's a kind of different country in Europe. It's different than every other country. It's probably different than a lot of other countries in the world. Actually, it's an interesting model they use there.
Yeah, for us here in Latin America, pretty much Western Europe is pretty much the same. But I'm pretty sure you don't see that. You don't see it that way.
Yeah, it is in some ways, and in some ways it's not. You know, I mean, it's kind of, Europe's kind of going through a lot of weird changes just now, really. Even Switzerland, actually, you know, because you have things like the migrant crisis happening just now, and there's a lot of sort of anti-immigration right-wing parties, even in Switzerland, actually, even though they've not really been touched by the migration crisis, which is interesting. But, like, it's that way where, you know, Europe's always one of those things where over the years it's been a powder keg where it didn't take much to explode into war. But I don't really see it happening that way this time, because there's now everyone has nuclear weapons, so it's far too much at stake.
That's definitely a game changer, right? And you know, we were talking before about how you should never say that's not going to happen here, that's impossible. And well, you know, when we were doing a lot of infighting in the 19th century, and by we I mean people in the American continent. And people in the Americas, mm-hmm. Yeah, there was infighting in every country in America in the 19th century after, you know, independence of several countries. The first Haiti was the first to become independent, and you see where that leads you sometimes. You know, in the 19th century, where there was a lot of infighting in the Americas, you guys in Europe were having a period of peace, and we're having, that was the century of peace and the century of gold. And, you should never say it's not going to happen here, because, you know, then World War I happened, and then World War II happened, and they both began in Europe. Right? We can talk more about that in hour two, so stay tuned. Worms.
Worms.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Estos son los Freedom Fiends Trigger Warning, transmitiendo desde el cañón iónico de baja órbita del campo de reeducación libertario en la cima de la plaza financiera bestial en el satélite artificial Leaper 2017 en la región de Alpha Centauri. Y seguimos con la magia. Can you feel it? Can you feel it, Dan, there, Dan Green from the UK?
I can feel that. I understood the last bit. My Spanish isn't as good as it used to be. I should mention at this point, though, that the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT Nay Government License, which allows reuse by anyone at all, except for governments. And you can learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Yeah, so, that's one of the contributions of the Fiends to humanity, right?
Oh, yeah. It's more fun than Creative Commons.
Yeah, it's for everybody, but not exactly everyone.
No, not the governments.
Yeah.
We have to be true to our anti-government stance.
Yeah, if you're wearing a funny hat or a funny uniform and you want to use the Fiends, I'm sorry, you can't. You can possibly quit and then do all the fiending you want, all the remixing you want.
And you feel better for stopping working for the government.
Yeah. The Fiends thing is just an added benefit. Your life will be so much better. You can write your memoirs and say, and at this point I stopped working for the government. And, your children will thank you for it.
Humanity will thank you.
Yeah. This is hour two of the Freedom Fiends. And we have been talking about, since this is an international show, we've been talking about how things are different and how they are the same in the UK, where Dan is, and in Mexico City, where I am, myself, Hugo. And, the way those things compare to how it is today in America. I say America, even though I'm not American, but I can try. And, we were wondering about Dan and I. I discovered today that we're wondering about, why and how things are different in America. Why there's a libertarian movement that's so much bigger than in the rest of the countries. And, is there a difference between the rest of the world and America that would, account for that or that would explain that? I don't know, Dan, what you've been thinking about that.
That's quite an interesting thing, and I've often wondered this a lot myself. I mean, I know that a lot of the people, for example, that are in places in America, there's a lot of Europeans who moved there, over hundreds of years and things, and I don't know why they retain that sort of more of a spirit of liberty than they have here. I suppose if you think about it, there is kind of a lot of, there's historical factors and things like that. I mean, for example, when socialized healthcare came to the UK, it was in the aftermath of World War II. It was 1948. And obviously, understandably, a lot of people with an awful lot of health trouble and stuff like that. So, why wouldn't they have wanted free healthcare? It just seemed like a good idea. And I don't know, Scotland is a bit more, some people will argue this and they can all they want, but Scotland tends to be a bit more left-wing than the rest of the UK for some reason. And I've tried to think about this over the years. I mean, I can point to a bunch of historical factors, things like, there was a thing in the early 90s called the poll tax, which brought down Margaret Thatcher and her government. Conservative stayed in power, but eventually Thatcher had to resign, and that was an anti-tax movement. But an awful lot of socialists You know, I'm thinking of some classic Scottish socialists. Anyone who knows anything about Scottish socialism will know the name Tommy Sheridan. People like that got a real start there. And I don't really know. It's funny how, I mean, I've heard people make the argument that, like, we were fighting, you know, national socialism in World War II, and then in the aftermath started implementing socialist policies. But I don't know. It's a kind of weird thing. I mean, people here, I mean, like, if you try and tell anyone that we should get rid of the National Health Service, oh, try that and see what happens in this country. I'm telling you, people are not happy. It's even worse if you say we should have guns. You know, and I don't know if it's just been ingrained over the years here. And I don't know maybe how, maybe it's, I don't know, mate. I think I can say maybe it's got a lot to do with, I mean, you could go further back probably, but you did have a lot of this stuff in the, you know, in the aftermath of World War II. And then, I don't know, I mean, there is still things, I mean, Margaret, I mean, a lot of industries were national industries and things like that, and then towards through the 1980s, they got privatized, but there's even people in this country calling for renationalization of industry and things like that. And, I mean, I don't have a great answer as to why we're more left-wing here, but I don't know if it's something to do with a lot of those factors, you know?
I don't know, maybe, and I was listening to you right now talking about how socialized healthcare got implemented, but I don't know, maybe it's just a matter of time. Maybe it's just a matter of, you know, people who lost the war, World War II, and people who won the war, and people who are closer than others to Russia and to the Eastern European bloc. Because I can see the same thing, the exact same thing happening in the U.S. Let's say anything. It's already being implemented when socialized healthcare or single payer, or whatever you want to call it, is starting to get implemented in the U.S. You just think about the U.S. in, I don't know, 20, 25 years, you'll be having the same kind of problem as you're having in the U.K. trying to get rid of a thing that people think is good for them, like national health care or socialized health care. I don't see it happening in any different way in 20 years. We have social insurance here, and they have hospitals, and there's public health care, less universal, mainly just people who can't actually afford it in any way. I mean, not even insurance are using that service, and it's not really very good. I mean, it's not being, private healthcare is not prohibited here in Mexico, but most of the people who use the public services is because they're not able to afford anything else. And we have the same thing. If I argued for either privatization or outright elimination of these services, people would, you know, just eat me alive, like you were saying before. You know, it's even worse than calling for any kind of legalization of guns or weed. And that's why I'm thinking it. Maybe it's just a matter of time. Just the U.S. in terms of encroachments in our liberties is just further back in the horrible and natural progression of things. I don't know. What do you think about that? I think it would be the same in 20 years as it is right now in the UK. It's just a matter of time for healthcare, at least.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, it's not that we don't want people who can't afford it to have healthcare. You know, of course we do. It's just that there's other ways without the government having to do it. And I mean, I know in Canada they have nationalized health. I know it's slightly different than the UK, but like, I suppose they've still been, I don't know if maybe, I've only ever visited Canada one time, but I don't know if maybe, you know, they were sort of more under British rule for longer, you know, and they still have the Queen as their sort of head of state. So I don't know if maybe it's more close affiliation with Britain. I mean, I'm not an expert in Canada or policies or anything like that, but
they were part of the British Empire, if we would say, up until the 60s, right? That's when their current constitution was drawn. I think I wish we had a Canadian on the show right now. I think it's Diana, right? Who's Canadian?
Yeah, what a shame we need her.
She wouldn't know either. Yeah, yeah. So That's one thing, you know, and I think in that sense, the U.S. is no different than either the U.K. or Mexico. People just want free stuff. They still do. I'm not saying all people want free stuff, but I'm saying you can find enough people that want free stuff to get yourself elected and promise those things. Let's not even talk about other countries in Europe like Spain or, you know, Greece or or Venezuela in America, but in the American continent, I mean. But yeah, in that sense, it's pretty much the same. I'm pretty sure there's other things in which America is very special it could be a difference in the discourse, you know, and what they're saying rather than what they're doing. The liberty discourse in America is very important, very big, and even the Democrats, even the liberals, even people who want outright socialism, will use the term freedom and liberty to be able to advance their political goals, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
but yeah, and here people, you don't really hear politicians using those words terribly often here.
Yeah, same thing here. They would say, you know, security and compassion and all those things that sound like nanny states rather than using the word liberty and, God forbid, self-sufficiency. That's
absolutely.
Won't sell here.
And the other thing is we were talking before about, you know, don't think things can't happen. I mean, I don't know how many stories periodically come up in the British newspapers about how close the National Health Service is to collapsing. It comes all the time, and you don't know how many of them are just fear-mongering stories and how much are quite serious, but people here seem to think, I mean, some people here seem to think the National Health is quite secure and it'll be fine, but you don't know that. I mean, we have, you know, people living longer, an aging population. It could definitely collapse. Of course it could, but some people don't seem to think that could happen.
I don't know. Maybe they think it is really free instead of just paid for by everybody, including the ones who are not getting sick. Or, you know, it's probably that fantasy or that fallacy, because they're one and the same. You can get free stuff because you really can't unless you are to make doctors slaves and force them to work, even though even then you would have to buy medicine and, you know, equipment, even if you enslave the doctors.
Yeah,
there's no free stuff. That's
why. Exactly. I mean, there was actually some junior doctors here who were protesting and things because of pay cuts and things like that. And, you know, you will get people who are really smart, good doctors who will go to other countries where they can get paid better.
That's what happens, you know, the cattle leave the ranch, and then how are you gonna make do without that cattle? Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Meow.
Meow.
Meow. Meow. Meow. Meow. We're back. The fiends are back. And we were... Right now, I think the best thing we could do in the Western Hemisphere with all that socialist healthcare coming... is just try and stay healthy as much as we can, because you know the government cannot produce food, they cannot produce electricity. Well, they can, but they will do so very poorly that if we let them go into healthcare. You know, that's really important for us, right? That's not like you could go for a couple of days without electricity, but you can, if you're dying of something, you need attention right then, and affordable too.
Yeah,
I have a
absolutely.
I have a little story about that, and it's just I just knew that an aunt that he got in Venezuela got internet trouble, and she went to ask for help to the phone company, which is a public phone company. The phone company is owned by the government, and this didn't used to be that way. I don't know, 15 years ago, it used to be a private company, and right now they just told her that there's no dollars, there's no money to have the, they have no cable modems or whatever kind of modem they need, so she's gonna have to wait, and she doesn't know the time she's gonna have to wait. So we were wondering if I could send her a modem, and we're still working on that. And that's what happens. Just imagine if it were on the internet, if it was, I don't know, surgery.
Yeah.
And in the UK, in Canada, they have really long lines, don't they, for surgery?
Yeah, there is the waiting times. That's always it always comes up as a top political issue. There's always arguments about waiting times, and it always comes up. It's one of those things where, I mean, this doesn't sound great, but, like, you know, I've got a dog, and the vets here are private, obviously, and my dog can get seen a lot quicker than a lot of people I know in a hospital.
Yeah. That's kind of shocking, isn't it?
Kind of is, yeah. I mean, I know there's obviously differences and stuff, but it's one of those things. I mean, we're talking about why America's kind of, like, why America sort of thing in terms of liberty, and I don't know, there seems to be, from what I can gauge, you know, I've visited America a few times, and I'm in regular contact with a lot of American people, and there seems to be more of a individualistic, more of a kind of even entrepreneurial spirit there that's not quite the same here. You know, there seems to be more of a just a general ethos of self-sufficiency and things like that from what I can gauge, that, you know, for some reason it's just not here. I don't know if it's just a lot of years of big government here have just, you know, and people just kind of think, you know, that's the way it is. I mean, the amount of times that I'll talk to my mum and she'll say things like, oh, back when, years ago, a boy like you who was intelligent could get a good job with the government, and, you know, all this kind of thing. And I'm like, I don't want a good job with the government. <you know?
laughs> Yeah, I got a bit of that too, you know, some years ago. Until they realize, you know, it's not going to work. I'm never getting a job with the government. But yeah, that sounds like Mexico too. And, you know, people used to be, and you know, the British have such good humor about, you know, bureaucracy. And I remember now when I've you know, watched Monty Python's episodes, there's this famous one about the Ministry of Silly Walks, and you know, the whole thing. Well, it's funny. You can make a ministry about any silly thing, any stupid thing. You can have a bureaucracy running it, and I'm wondering right now if they're good, so good at understanding the problem, making fun of it. I don't know if you guys are. I don't know if you're aware of that. You know, that's a bad thing. That it's it doesn't have to be that way. Probably the humor is just a way of offloading all that pressure, all that, you know, tension that such government brings, and you can make fun of it because you think you really cannot change it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
There's been a lot of great British comedies like that have totally, you know, exposed the absurdity of bureaucracy and big government and things. I'm kind of minded of the show, it was called Yes Minister, and then later on it became called Yes Prime Minister, and that really showed how, like, the sort of the government minister that's the kind of main thing is clueless and doesn't really know what he's doing, and it's the civil servants, the bureaucrats, that are basically running the show, and it's so funny how that exposes it, but people just treat it as comedy, but it's quite serious.
We do that too, right? We make fun of government, but we're serious about it. There is a way to change.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
We're back. You are listening to the Freedom Fiends. Dan in Scotland, Hugo in Mexico, and we're sort of from an outsider perspective. We're talking a bit about America. I can only imagine that some people will be like, you're getting things wrong, but you know, if we do, then all the other hosts that are in the US can call us on that. So we're not.
Yeah,
worried.
Sure. There's so many episodes, you know, you can refer to. That was a good American accent you did right there. I cannot do that.
I don't think it was that great. But we, you know, but sometimes, you know, we are libertarians and we're not ashamed of it, despite the fact that it might be a sort of minority position in our countries. And, you know, one of our, we always say it in the Fiends, our favorite government thug is Ron Paul in the US. And he was in Mexico, wasn't he, Hugo?
Yeah, he was. That happened, you know, not this week, but last week. And he came here to Mexico to have a, and they gave him a lifetime achievement award. And I know the guys that it's an organization that's called Caminos de la Libertad, which translates roughly to Pathways to Liberty. And I know the guys that were pushing for it, were employees of that organization. I know they really wanted to have Ron Paul there. And I actually attended the event, and there was a dinner, and there was he gave a short speech. You know, the things that we've usually heard from Ron Paul. And by the way, he's also my favorite former government thug, and that's so good that he's no longer a government thug, and we don't have to do have to make any apologies for him. He's just, you know, we like him. now we don't have to say, despite the fact that he's a congressman or a candidate. Mm. And it was a short speech there, and people were taking pictures. I don't usually do that. I posted a picture of Ron Paul, but it was very curious for me that he, at some point in the speech, he touched upon he didn't mention Donald Trump by name, but what he did, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, he said, if you think you're a good businessman and you can order people around and get things done, that's completely different from, you know, being a politician or being in charge of the government, because you're chasing different objectives. And I thought that was completely directed at, well, not at Donald Trump, because he doesn't care, but at the people who are supporting Donald Trump in the Republican Party. And I want to make sure, I want to, you know, be very clear, we don't support any of these guys. We're not in support of any of the other guys that are not Donald Trump. It's just we're here to expose how they're all bad, right? And yeah, he said it completely different, and I was thinking, you know, he's all right. It's completely different. I've heard Donald Trump say, "I beat China all the time. Why can't we, you know, the royal we, the U.S. government, why can't we beat them?" You know, I would tell Donald Trump, you know, because beating people at doing business just has to do with yourself. You just have to work better, present a better alternative, or, you know, find out how to outcompete those people. And beating people in war is a lot of blood and, you know, tears and people dead. And, well, he doesn't, either he doesn't, either he's being disingenuous, he doesn't understand all the differences, but he doesn't talk about it, or he actually doesn't understand the difference, which is kind of scary. I don't know. I've done business.
When he started running, I kind of thought it was a joke at first. You know, he'd threatened to run for president for I heard him threatening that years ago. But I thought, you know, he seems like quite an ego-driven sort of guy, Donald Trump. And I didn't really think, I thought, well, there's very little chance of him getting elected. So I didn't think he would actually bother running, you know. And then when I heard him, I thought maybe this is a publicity stunt or whatever. But it's, I don't know, he obviously knows a lot of people, so he must have some kind of backing, he must have some kind of confidence, you know, or unless I've read articles as well where some people have alleged that maybe he doesn't have as much money as he claims to have, you know.
Yeah, I've heard that he's broke, actually. Well, broke maybe. In his level, no, broke like you and me. Yeah, but broke like, you know, I have $200 million and I owe $300 million. I'm broke.
Yeah, that's the thing. But it seems that, you know, for whatever reason, you know, he's being taken quite seriously. And it's funny, like, I know there's a lot of, you know, candidates like Hillary Clinton and stuff like that. But, I mean, on social media, the two I hear people really talking about the most are Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. And they're both at kind of, I don't want to say extremes, but they're both, you know, for American politics, they seem maybe on quite extreme, you know, poles apart, if you know what I mean.
I do, yeah, sure. Yeah, I think they are. And probably that's the reason why people are talking about them, because people have come to realize that Hillary or Obama or Clinton or George W. Bush or Senior Bush, they have the same policies. and the brother too. Yeah, they have the same policies. They are for the same things. They're not really, you know, the Democrats are not really socialists into it. They're not really into it. They're pragmatists, and which is really scary, because they will do anything for power and, you know, to stay there in power and to be elected. And the Republicans are pretty much the same too. They will take whatever position that gets them elected. So, yeah, if you want to talk about elections, you probably have to talk about these extremists that are not telling the same things as the others. Because, you know, after a while, it just gets old and gets boring. And people are waking up to that fact. We're going to elect the next, you know, Clinton, the third, or, you know, Bush the sixth, whatever it is, it's just gonna be the same. Probably that's the reason they have to keep the illusion of choice available, you know, and alive.
Yeah, the American Revolution was fought against, like, sort of because they didn't want to be ruled by the monarchy in Britain and things like that. But then if you keep having successive Bushes, successive Clintons, then, like, you're establishing a new type of monarchy there. You know, it's like, oh, we'll vote for this person because they've got a surname that we know we've been ruled by them before. And it's almost like, you know, they could say, well, we're still going to vote for them, but it's almost like, it just feels a bit monarchical. Like, you could say, like, I mean, if Jeb Bush became the president, you could start calling him Bush the Third, you know.
Yeah.
And then he sounds like a king or something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, completely. Totally. Yeah. I think not everybody's able to see that, but it is that way. In previous, there was an election process in a way in monarchies. Previous, you have to be part of the right family, but yeah, you know, it would all happen behind closed doors, like electing the Pope is happen behind closed doors. If one of the, you know, if the eldest son was, you know, just a stupid guy and or a dangerous guy or someone who had radical ideas, the family members or the políticos in that country would, you know, exhort him to not be the king or to abdicate. And that happened. It just didn't happen with 300 million people or 200 million people or with a million people, just, you know, the close family. And that's exactly the same way it happens right now. I'm pretty sure, you know, the Bushes are having their own conclaves right now and trying to, you know, figure out if this guy is worth it, if he's capable of winning, or it's all the same thing is happening right now. It's aristocracy or monarchy and families and dynasties all over again. It's just, oh, there's one Bernie Sanders and one Donald Trump, and they're playing the part of the buffoons right now.
Yeah, that's the thing. But like, they'll obviously, I mean, maybe they're not as sort of tied to the system in the way that, say, a Bush or a Clinton would be. But I mean, to get to that level of politics, you have to be locked in with the right people. You know,
sure.
That's the thing. I mean, nobody that runs, like, that gets that high up in a political party to run, like, at that level, you know, they've got to know certain people. They've got to be part of that in group. And that's what I think what we always try and get across to people. It's that, I mean, you could say this politician's different, that politician's different. They've obviously got to be part of this group, you know, because they're the people that are allowed to get in.
I would say they would have been weeded out long before if they weren't the same. You know, when you were running for your first, I don't know, dog catcher on your district, you know, they realize you're not a good player. You won't play along. You don't want to enforce or strengthen the system, and they'll just weed you out. You're not going to get postulated for next time. So yeah, if you're that high up, and well, right now I'm trying to connect with Ron Paul, you know, with the Ron Paul thing, and Ron Paul is just an anomaly. You can just say he's an anomaly. You don't have to explain Ron Paul. Just the one guy in 500 years. You don't have to explain him. He's just, you know, he said it in his own words. My district kept wanting me to go back, and I'm thinking he probably was amazed time after time that they kept electing him. I don't know, but I don't know who's the next congressman from that district. You know who's getting elected right now, but I'm. If I haven't heard of him, I'm pretty sure he's not Ron Paul. He's not, you know, a different Ron Paul. Not, he doesn't have the same policies. Yeah. Otherwise, we'd be hearing about him, right? Or her, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not...
We get that kind of thing here.
What?
We get that sort of thing here, and we get that sort of, like, for example, there'll be, like, people who come out of university and they studied politics at university, and they'll become an advisor to a certain politician. And then when they've done that for long enough, what will happen is maybe say an election comes up in a certain region, and say it's the Labour Party, and their candidate always wins in that region. A lot of the time they won't have a local person from there running. They'll take someone that's been an advisor like this to close to someone high up and do what they call parachuting them in. They'll take them from somewhere else, they'll bring them to that area, you know, and they'll stand them so they can get into Parliament, and then that's them in. And you see that happening all the time, and it's these people who have just lived in their own little political world, not had real jobs or anything like that. They just live in this political bubble. That's all they've done their whole working and educational life, and they've got no idea of reality outside of that. And I see that in this country so many times.
And they will tell you that he or she is a fresh face, but you know they've been vetted before. That's the whole thing. Sure, we got that in Mexico too. Yeah, let's go to the market, which is less slimy that we're talking about.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his Porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
Meow. Meow. I don't know about you, Dan, but I got a little, you know, weird we were tasting my mouth after talking about politics for so many minutes.
Too dirty.
yeah, it's a weird flavor, actually. Blood mixed with something nasty. I don't know. Yeah, but you know the thing with we were talking before about Ron Paul and that he came here to Mexico, and this was a party, and the whole thing was very festive because he's no longer a government thug, and that's good, and he's been able to talk to an audience that's not American, and people in Mexico who understand some of the things he's saying more easily, and some of the things he's saying they don't understand at all. When it's when he's talking about foreign invasions and foreign military adventures, everybody, you can see the look on everybody's face. They're all pretty much cheering, even though it's a room. Well, actually, because it's a room full of libertarians, but the usual. If you did a man on the street interview here in Mexico, and you would get the message that people oppose foreign interventions, but when you ask further, they only oppose them when they're done by the U.S. government. And they have a blindfold when it comes to their own government, which is the same in every country. I would say that. Mm-hmm. How is patriotism alive in the UK right now?
It's a kind of odd thing in the UK because there's all this history about Britain invading Ireland and things like that. I mean, how it kind of shows its head in Scotland recently is we have this party that's empowering the Scottish government called the Scottish National Party, and they're nationalists and they're quite sort of left wing. And they were behind the Scottish independence referendum. That was their thing, their idea. So you've got this new breed of nationalists in Scotland now. I mean, they, quite a lot of the young people I've noticed are quite into this party, and they're a very authoritarian party. I read a good article on the Backbencher website about how they were the most authoritarian party in Britain, actually. And it's interesting because now that's kind of, in some ways, it's almost leading to people in England being a bit more nationalist than England. But you get this weird mixture here because you get some people who are like really about the UK and they want the UK to stick together and what we call unionists. And then you get here what we call nationalists who are not so bothered about the UK staying together. They're more about their own particular country, that's within the UK. So it's a kind of different thing here. I mean, we don't sort of have like sort of the extremes in America where if you burn a flag or something like that, people don't have Scotland flags outside their houses and things like that. I mean, maybe some people do, but you don't see it very much. So there's not kind of that sort of element to it. It's just that it's a different type of nationalism that's quite unique to this part of the world, actually.
Do you see UK flags flying around houses and businesses in the UK?
Not everywhere. In some places, you see, particularly in Glasgow, where I live, there's a large Irish community here. Where my grandparents all came from Ireland, and these kind of things still come up. They come up in football and stuff as well, funnily enough. You have people here who generally maybe support the team Celtic, and they're Irish heritage, and they're quite against the UK. They don't like Union Jacks or things like that, and then you get the other people who would maybe be sort of supporters of the team Rangers, and they would be more kind of unionist. It's funny here in football, it happens all over the world, but it happens here too. Politics and religion get dragged in. So you do have these opposing communities here. And I mean, wouldn't happen all the time, but if you walked into the wrong area of Glasgow wearing, say, a t-shirt with a Union Jack on it, someone could beat you up or stab you.
Oh, that's
weird. It's happened before.
That's terrible.
Could happen, could happen.
Yeah, but before. I don't know, the Fiends, I don't think the Fiends are into nationalism at all. I think we should be loving towards people around, and I think that's okay, but that's not nationalism, that's just being a good human being, wouldn't you say that?
Yeah, yeah. We're interested in people, not countries.
yeah, same thing. It's weird. Not many people fly the flag of Mexico in Mexico, but
Even so.
Love for everybody, and you know, forget about those things or imaginary lines. We're doing theme phone from the UK and Mexico, and you know, it's coming on all right. I don't think it matters that I'm on one side of the ocean and you're on the other one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So worms to that.
Worms.